All right, let's go now to Charles Stratford. He's in Mariupol in southeastern Ukraine, and Charles is in a car for us. Charlie, just tell us where you are and what you're doing and what's happening there.
Hi, Darren. Yeah, well, you join us now in a car. We've come to have a look around the city. I'm going to turn the camera around now so you can see it. I mean, there are still people on the streets. It is obviously increasingly quiet. And in the last 10 minutes or so, there have been another series of loud blasts. We cannot confirm where. But as you see, you know, there are pedestrians moving around. There is light traffic. We're on our way to one of the city's exits to try and get a steer on how many people are trying to leave the city. As we've been reporting, Mariupol of great strategic importance, one would think, to any kind of invasion by Russian forces, largely because of its huge port, its naval base, and potentially as a hub to be able to connect areas of the east, the Eastern Front in Donbass, with what analysts say could be a plan by Putin to connect that with the section north of Crimea to create what analysts describe as a corridor. As you can see, there's people here waiting by bus stops, very, very little traffic. The shelling here started in the early morning. It has been very sporadic. We are getting reports from a naval base, interestingly, around 100 kilometres west of Mariupol, a town called Berdansk. The military there saying that there were positions in that area that were being shelled. They said they believed from Russian forces in Russian-annexed Crimea. As you can see, very, very quiet streets. I'm passing, interestingly, this is a bank. So you can see people obviously desperate to try and, increasingly desperate to try and get money out. And we have been expecting some sort of cyber attack, if you like. The network's obviously still going strong, as we wouldn't be able to bring you these pictures. But it's quite a surreal experience here, as you can see on the streets. There are still, you know, people walking around. We've also heard reports, we've been speaking to people in some of the villages that we've been visiting in the last week or so on the Ukrainian government-controlled side, villages on the front line. People in those villages saying that they are hunkered down in their cellars. The shelling has been very heavy overnight and it was ongoing this morning. And those villages, I suppose, are around 50 kilometres from here. We've also had reports, as I say, which we cannot confirm, of a village that we visited north of Kharkiv about 2 weeks ago, directly on the border with Russia. Now, this was an area that had seen absolutely no fighting whatsoever in the 8 years of the conflict. And certainly, according to our sources, one source now describing that village as having been flattened. So reports there of heavy shelling, potentially fighting north of Kharkiv. But as I say, we are unable to confirm that.
Charlie, just talk us through. You were mentioning earlier, Charlie, about.
Go on, Darren.
Charlie, let me just interrupt you there. You were talking earlier about the strategic importance. I mean, I think it's worth just reminding our viewers about the strategic importance of Mariupol. You were saying it acts possibly as a potential hub for some kind of corridor across from Donbass down to Crimea. Just talk us through how that would work, Charlie.
Well, the theory is that if there was a push by Russian forces and separatists, Russian-backed separatists from the Donbass region in the east, that push could well be joined by a simultaneous push by troops, by Russian forces in Crimea. They would push up towards towns like Kherson, big cities that we visited in the last few weeks. They would push up north from that, and they would head east. The forces coming out of Donbass would head west, and there is a very strategic road there, which I believe is the M14, if I'm not my memory serves me well, the M14, a very strategic road there, to take that area of land, to control that, and join up Russian forces in Crimea, with obviously the pro-Russia separatists in the separatist-held areas. Now, the reason why analysts have been saying this is a potentially important move, and they've been saying this for months now, is because in 2014, the Ukrainians, once after the Russians had taken or annexed Crimea, the Ukrainians took control of the water resources north of Crimea. There are canals there that run off the Dnieper River that supplied up to 85% of the peninsula, the Crimean peninsula's water. Now, we know that Russia has been building wells in the subsequent years, or trying to build wells on the Crimean Peninsula. We know that very quickly they built a bridge across the Kerch Strait to connect the Crimean Peninsula with the Russian mainland. But the theory is that they are still suffering very, very difficult conditions with water. So that certainly, according to military analysts, would be a viable and not inconceivable option for Russian forces. Yeah, to create that corridor from the east, the Donbass region, the separatist-controlled area of the Donbass region, to those areas of northern Crimea.
Charlie, it is extraordinary watching you driving around in Mariupol whilst this invasion is happening. Let me get a final thought from you, Charles. I mean, there are not many people walking around on the street, and that's that could give an indication of just the atmosphere that people are scared. Is there an atmosphere of fear, of trepidation? You know, do people think this is the calm before the storm?
Well, I think what's interesting as well, as you can see, the streets here are considerably busier than the streets we saw when we initially came live, 5 minutes or so ago. There's a lot more traffic here, and the traffic is moving in both directions, and we're heading in the direction of going out of town. Certainly the shelling that we heard earlier, we understood, was along the coast. And that's where we're close to where we started reporting, started talking to you a few minutes ago. One thing that we hear, though, throughout our travels in this area over the last few weeks is it's surprising how seemingly little afraid many people are in this area. They've kind of resigned to the fact that this conflict has gone on for 8 years. And it's also important to recognise that a lot of people in this area are very sympathetic to Russia as well. They have a cultural identity, a language that they use that is Russian. So a lot of them do identify with Russia. But the overlying feeling, certainly in a town like Mariupol, as you can see this morning, you know, you can see traffic moving around. But there's a couple there, very relaxed, walking around. There's this feeling that, well, surely this couldn't happen. There couldn't be a battle to take control of this huge city on the Azov Sea. So, yeah, by and large, people have been very sort of controlled in their in their descriptions of their emotions. There is no underlying sense of panic that we are seeing at the moment. I mean, this is quite a popular shopping area. It doesn't look like these people are rushing to get out of the city, does it? It's going to be interesting. We'll know more the closer we get to the outskirts of the city, but. Yeah, this is where we are at the moment. I think, as I mentioned earlier, it's also important to recognise that Mariupol has a lot of fighters in it, a lot of military and a lot of paramilitaries in it. Groups that... there's another queue there, I think, for a bank. Yes, you see people queuing up there at an ATM. Yeah, the city's got a lot of weapons in it, a lot of armed men, a lot of men that are prepared to fight.
Okay.
Some of these paramilitary groups have been very successful in defending the city in 2014, for example. So if there was to be some sort of push into the city, I think it would be not inconceivable that things could deteriorate very rapidly indeed. And you could well be seeing, potentially a lot of civilian casualties.